Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Community Perspectives episode with Dr. Bharad Nandakumar. I'm David.
And I'm Marla. And today we will be discussing the paper titled Exercise Therapy Guides Cortical Reorganization After Mid-Thoracic Spinal Contusion to Enhance Control of Lower Thoracic Muscles, Supporting Functional Recovery. This paper was published in the Journal of Experimental Neurology in 2023. The paper was submitted by Asia's Early Career Committee, and our guest today is Dr. Bharad Nandakumar. Dr. Nandakumar is an assistant scientist at the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis at the University of Miami. He hails from Chennai and graduated from the Amrita University with a Bachelor of Technology in Electronics and Instrumentation Engineering. He then moved to Drexel University in Philadelphia to pursue a Master of Science in Biomedical Engineering, where he worked as a student researcher at the Moxon Neurobiotic Lab, studying the underlying changes in the brain circuitry associated with the development of chronic neuropathic pain post-spinal cord injury. Moving then to the University of California, Davis to pursue a doctoral degree in biomedical engineering at the Center of Neuroengineering and Medicine in Dr. Karen Moxon's research, he examined the neuronal encoding of posture in the cortex and the role of rehabilitation in the recovery of function after spinal cord injury. This work involved many of the multi-site chronic in vivo electrophysiology experiments we will be discussing today. In subsequent postdoctoral training at the University of Minnesota's Neuromodulation Research Center, Dr. Nandakumar's work focused on the development of neuromodulation approaches targeted at ameliorating sleep dysfunction associated with Parkinson's disease in non-human primates. His current work at Dr. Patrick Ganser's Neurotechnology Laboratory at the Miami Project focuses on developing neuromodulation therapies to improve recovery after spinal cord injury. Welcome, Dr. Nandakumar.
Thank you, David and Marla.
So I think the first kind of most important thing picking up this paper is the rats. So why do we research rats when we're looking at spinal cord injury? And what information, how can we relate the information that we get from rats to the human body?
Yeah, that's a good question. That question gets asked around a lot. So, surprisingly, rats serve to be a very good model, translational research model, from which a lot of therapies have gone from the preclinical bench side to all the way they made it all the way to the clinic. This is primarily because the central nervous system, at least for for functions like walking, voluntary control of movement, a lot of these systems have actually been conserved all the way from the rats and to the humans. It turns out that we are not that distant from the rat when you look at it along the phylogenetic tree. So it's the rats, you have the rats, and then you move to tree shrews, and maybe you go up the ladder, and then you go to like primates, and then you have the human. So it turns out that we are not that far away, and rats serve to be a very good model, since a lot of the essential circuits that are responsible for the generation of movement are preserved. For example, in the rodent, there are these circuits in the spinal cord that are called the central pattern generators. So what they are like pre-programmed circuits that enable this rhythmic locomotion of your of both your legs. And this circuit has also been shown to be found in the human. Major tracts that control movement, for example, the corticospinal tract, you see the same organization in both the rodent brain and also the human brain. And in humans, there is a lot more nuanced, and there is a lot more area dedicated to more fine motor control compared to the motor control that you wouldn't need for the rodent. But more or less, the organization of the brain, and how it's connected to the spinal cord as it relates to the control of movement is very, very similar between the rodent and the human. So this makes the rodent a very good model to look at to understand how we can improve recovery after a paralysis and apply the same principles directly to the human. And a lot of the technologies have actually already come in. Now we have the epidural stimulation technology that enables people to regain movement after paralysis, and all of that work is primarily coming from the research less than a decade ago in the rodent model. So a lot of that has been like very translated to the clinic, and it's been very it's been a very promising approach. So that's why it's a rodent is still a very relevant model. The rodents are still very relevant model for recovery of walking.
Definitely. You've sold us recovery of walking, recovery of trunk function as well. We hear, Bharat, if you'll allow me, that you're a trunk guy, and we're really excited about your trunk paper. And you previously told us one little thing, if you can just repeat this, that's useful about the anatomy, the organization of a rodent brain that allows you to study trunk in particular using the methods
Right.
that you use. Can you just say one thing there?
Right. So in the human homunculus, the human brain, you have a lot of these. It's very dense, and you have a lot of this sulci and gyri, and the trunk region in the, if you look at the human homunculus, it is far deeper in the brain, making it in one of the one of the deep gyri, and it makes it very difficult to be able to access that with either fMRI or other approaches in the human brain. But in the rodent, luckily the cortex is very it's flat, more or less. There is some slight curvature, but it's more or less flat, and we can access all of the regions from up forelimb, from the upper body to the lower body to the face. All of them, we can access them like a simple Cartesian, in a simple Cartesian manner, we can access them. That approach would be very difficult to do in the human, because the trunk region in the brain is probably very deep, and making it hard to access that region.
And you did access, you took advantage of this this happy accident in the rodent brain. And so to do so, can you set us up a little bit here? You studied the trunk by stimulating a brain, and you really wanted to zoom in on a certain response. What was the main focus of the paper there?
So for the paper, I was interested in looking at how the brain is controlling trunk musculature, because brain control of trunk is important, because this circuit is a very useful circuit for maintaining balance or reacting to an unexpected postural perturbation. So this cortical engagement of trunk is very important. And after spinal cord injury, you lose voluntary control of trunk. So we wanted to understand how the brain is reorganizing itself after a spinal cord injury and see if it can actually gain back some trunk control. And we can also look at what is the effect of physical rehab on this rewiring in the brain to gain better access to the trunk. So we studied that in a rodent model by stimulating the brain with electricity and recording trunk movements and muscle activity from different parts of the trunk, and understanding and sort of creating this map of the regions that control lower thoracic, upper thoracic, and mid thoracic. And when we do this, we can use this map as a framework to understand reorganization after a spinal injury and the effect of rehab.
Yeah, so that term, like brain rewiring, that's kind of that big term in the title there, the cortical reorganization. That's kind of the way we think about the cortical reorganization. And I think Dave actually had mentioned in our scholarly episode that it's unusual for us to think, or maybe sometimes we don't think about how the brain can change after a spinal cord injury
Right.
as well. I think that was kind of a big point that you guys have in this paper.
So yeah, that's the brain plasticity for a long time was thought that like it's something that occurs during development. And for a long time, it was thought that maybe after you grow up and you become adults, beyond a point that everything is like fixed and nothing changes. But what is noticed is that like after an injury, somehow the brain remains plastic and it's constantly changing and adapting. In this case, for example, like after a spinal injury, right, the brain loses complete access to, in case of a thoracic injury, it loses a lot of times complete access to the areas below the injury level, which is the hind limb, and you have hind limb paralysis, right? But the regions of the brain, the region in the brain that's involved in controlling hind limb is no longer silent. What happens is those regions now start to process and control other information from other body parts. So we found that in our paper that like those hind limb centers in the brain that processed hind limb information, now instead of doing that, since there was no hind limb, they start encoding for trunk information. This is what we call as cortical reorganization. So those cortical areas now instead control trunk muscles. And we found that if you gave if you gave the animal enough physical therapy, this ability to control trunk was in fact better. And if the in our animal model, if the animal had to improve just more beyond more improve a lot more beyond just weight supported stepping, if it had to improve its ability to co better coordinate its upper and lower limbs together, then the reorganization had to be within the trunk motor cortex, such that there is more enhanced control of the lower trunk muscles that's below the injury level. And we think that the therapy helps kind of maintain those connections of trunk control below the level of injury, and this could be very beneficial to the recovery of function.
Yeah, so if you'll allow us to summarize, previous papers had shown after spinal cord injury, maybe the connection to the legs, what dear listener, you might hear Bharat refer to as the hind limbs, had changed will change after spinal cord injury, and you really zoomed in on the trunk and then the relationship between the trunk and the lower extremities, and then as well as mapping that in a much more fine-grained way, which as a scientist I found very satisfying. You showed that in incomplete spinal cord injury, walking therapy increased the brain's connection to the trunk.
Right.
Great. So then we have the question: if walking therapy increased the trunk connection, do you think the reverse would be true and trunk therapy could increase a walking connection?
Yes, I think so. I think that's how it's when more or less, I think that's what's going on. I feel like it's activity dependent plasticity. The more you use a muscle, the connections to the neural connections to the brain is going to get enhanced the more you use it. I think that enhancing, I think in our preclinical animal experiments, what's going on is the animal, ha because of the injury, the animal has to use is using its trunk more during rehab. It's better engaging the trunk more rehab as a substitute to bear to compensate for the weight loss. And by allowing for more trunk control, by maybe reducing the body weight support or reducing the use of harness, I think that could be a very beneficial way in which you are allowing for voluntary control of the trunk. And when you repeatedly do that, you're probably strengthening those circuits, and we think that that could eventually lead to improvement in balance and improvement in weight bearing after a spinal injury.
So, to critique my own question, it sounds like you're saying the locomotor training that these rodents did, which was unsupported, allowed them to use their trunk. So the walking involved the trunk. But if the trunk, if there was, in theory, a trunk therapy that didn't involve the legs, probably there wouldn't be that remapping of the brain to overlap those two regions.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. What if you could I do trunk without engaging the legs or the
Yeah,
upper
some
body?
breathing and balance type of thing where you're
Yeah, I've
seated and the
never thought
legs aren't.
about that actually. That's I don't know. That's an interesting question.
It might be a scientific one. But it's a great point you bring up, and that came up in our scholarly episode, that almost all of our locomotor training currently for people with spinal cord injuries involves some type of, if you will, accidental trunk support. And so maybe the future could look a little bit like freeing the trunk in some way.
Yeah, with an exo, we are on the track, already on the track with exoskeleton, where we can finally adjust and like you provide a supportive environment for the patient to make mistakes, to even fall and gain back control. You allow a very safe and maybe we can provide a very safe environment for the patient to actually engage with their trunk again, rather than have some automated program. Like tell them like, oh, okay, this is the weight support you need to get and just move your lower body.
Absolutely. That facilitated failure is really tricky in the context of balance where there's a fall risk, but that's a big call to action for all the engineers out there. Marla?
Yeah. And Brad, I think one of the important things also to think about with a paper like this, which is in more of a preclinical setting where we're not taking your intervention, directly to people living with spinal cord injuries. We're still in the phase where we're working with, in the animal testing phase. Can you talk a little bit about what other further steps need to be done in order for us to take this to, a person living with spinal cord injury, just so that people know, if we don't as clinicians or as physicians, take what you say here in this paper and immediately put it into clinical practice, why there's kind of, that gap.
Yeah, there has to be. This is the very beginning of all of this, right? There has to be more validation, more clinical trials that will help. First of all, like this, we have to look, understand, we have to revisit cortical control of trunk in patients after with spinal cord injury to see if the patients who recover with to have who show more of a better recovery have enhanced trunk control, enhanced cortical control of trunk. So we need to first do a clinical study to see whether this actually holds good from the preclinical model. And then once we do clinical studies, then we'll have to do more rigorous assessment, collaborate with clinicians and do a more rigorous study to see whether the hypothesis that like allowing for better trunk control, whether it really benefits the patient. So there is a long way to go and for us, and we are right in the very beginning of this translation phase, and we have to go through clinical trials and rigorous studies with with collaborating with clinicians to be able to make this basic science go from bedside to clinic.
To be at the beginning, you have to have started. And we start by asking you about these different animal models because you've worked with so many different ones, but all in the context, almost all, of the neural control of posture. So we want to thank you because people living with spinal cord injury have always known about the importance of trunk and balance. And since 2004, it's been clearly, generalizably, evidence-based known that people with spinal cord injuries prioritize balance and trunk above certain other functions that scientists sometimes get hyperfixated on, like stepping or leg muscles. And so just to thank you for going down this path with us across multiple models. We'll be watching your work, especially in the context of that translation you're referring to. And if you want to sign us off, maybe here at the end with one statement about the importance of trunk and maybe a little bit of your thoughts on why trunk was previously underrepresented, but where it's going in the future.
Yeah, so I personally believe that to really get out of to really push yourself from this body weight support system to really enable walking wheelchair free someday, that's the dream. We would have to figure out this neural control of trunk and how we can better enhance this control of trunk to be able to address this this problem of actually freeing yourself from the wheelchair. I've been at it for a while, and hopefully in the future we could collaborate with more clinicians who are going to start looking at trunk control, particularly in the context of rehab, and how we can design. And it'll not only be a collaboration with clinicians, but also collaboration with engineers to design better body weight support systems that allow for more enhanced control of trunk, and maybe body weight support systems that bring back the cortex in the loop, maybe a brain-controlled body weight support system where it could sense the cortex, what the intent of the patient, and automatically adjust the body weight support system. That's kind of the future that I dream of.
Yeah, that's awesome insight, because I think you really encapsulated how, something that seems so far away from the patient really can reach this population in multiple different ways. And now how we're able to take a paper about rats and make it into a body weight support system that's going to help people recover from incomplete spinal cord injuries is absolutely unbelievable. And we really appreciate your time and your knowledge. And thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank the Asia Early Career Committee for actually nominating a paper of mine. And it's a great support for early career researchers such as me. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, David and Marla. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's Early Career Committee. The podcast was founded thanks to the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is now made possible by your producer hosts, David McMillan, Freya Kalik, and Marla Petrello, our production assistant and editor, Abby Fox, and Asia's front office. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.